He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
There's so much big news out there. I thought I'd start with Sol's recital this morning.
She sounds great.
The third grade at her school, letting forth with, how you doing, Noam? I'm in California. Noam's in New York. What's up, dude?
Not much. What are you doing in California?
Well, I'm here on a very, very special television project that will be airing soon. I'll tell you all about it exclusively to our listeners here on 77 WABC. Something very, very exciting. It has to do with a big network finale. But I've got a lot of things on my mind aside from Sol's recital, missing that, which is traumatic for me. But there are other things that are much more earth-shattering, and I want to share them with you. I've got a lot of things on my mind. I think that the harsh suspension of NBC anchorman Brian Williams, which I think is an almost certain career killer for the NBC anchorman, is way over the top. I'll ask you whether you believe that I am right about that. I also want to talk about the indictment of the cop who accidentally killed a Kai Gurley in the darkened stairwell of that notorious Brooklyn housing project. Now that he's been indicted on manslaughter charges, the question I have for everyone listening, and we have to be frank about this, and I have the same question for the mayor and for the district attorneys in the various boroughs of the city: would there have been the same result? Would the cop have been indicted on these same facts, same exact facts, in Staten Island? You know, it's a question that we have to ask ourselves. What role race played in terms of the new DA in Brooklyn vowing to bring justice for the people, from protecting them from alleged excesses by the cops? And you know what happened with our pal Dan Donovan in Staten Island and the case out there, the choking case out in Staten Island. So it's the Eric Garner case. So this is a very troubling question for New York. We also have this, and Noam played it in his newscast, the purported confession from the killer in the long ago disappearance of 6-year-old Etan Pates. I mean, you've heard some of the sound from that confession. Do you believe it? Do you believe that this mentally troubled man, these many years later, is giving us a confession, or is he telling the cops and the prosecutors what they want to hear? Or, you know, you talk about false memories. I mean, is that one? And I'm sure many of you want to weigh in on those stories, but I want to start, if I may, with Kyla Mueller, because you've heard the President of the United States has just asked the Congress of the United States for a war authorization. You know, now that Kyla Mueller joins the other Americans savagely murdered, the Jordanian pilot burned to death, now we know her family's received pictures of her dead body, and you know that the butchers of ISIS maintain she was killed in an airstrike by our allies, the Jordanian Air Force, last week. I don't care how she died. She died because of ISIS. Because of ISIS. And her family's reaction to her death has been absolutely, as you might understand, heart-wrenching. Here, listen. Listen to this. You got that, Crash? Give me what Marty wanted, the dramatic cut from the family. Come on, dude. Screw me up here.
The information that they reviewed did not allow them to arrive at a conclusion.
Give me cut 21. Cut 21. It's from her aunt.
She had a quiet, calming presence. She was a free spirit, always standing up for those who were suffering and wanting to be their voice.
Now let me hear from the president. Cut 22.
The immediate reaction is heartbreak. I've been in touch with Kayla's family. She was an outstanding young woman and a great spirit.
All right, so there's the aunt, there's the president of the United States. So What kind of authorization does Congress give the President of the United States? I want to tell you why I think the Republicans are right on this one and the Democrats are wrong. What the Democrats are afraid of, we've all lived through the Iraq War and the authorization to go to combat based on the wrong intelligence about weapons of mass destruction in 2003. We know that the Iraq War was started under false pretenses. We all remember the 13 long years, the 7,000 American GIs dead. So the president's own party, the Democrats, want a tailored, limited authorization that they say will restrict our war fighting against ISIS to airstrikes and military training. But I ran into Senator John McCain at Fox News the day before yesterday. And we talked about this. And the problem with an authorization of limited participation is that what happens if there's a contingency that the president needs to respond to? What if he needs a combat brigade to do something, to rescue somebody? He needs a special forces operation in there. You can't have the president, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States, being handcuffed. What I want is for the Congress to be united on this one. We know that unlike Saddam Hussein in 2003, with the phony charge that he had these weapons of mass destruction, in 2015, we know what ISIS is. We know that they are savages, they are butchers, they have taken over a huge swath of Iraq and Syria. We know they are barbarians, what they want to do. We know that ISIS has sent probes to Libya and to Afghanistan. We know that this criminal organization, which has hijacked this religion, is waging war against civilization as we know it. Is there anybody listening right now who doubts that if they could, ISIS would blow up Grand Central Station? They would blow up Penn Station, JFK, a grade school someplace? They would. You know they would. Congress has to give the president the green light to do whatever he has to do. War isn't like accounting. You can't say you go this far and not any further. You can't predict what happens once the shooting starts. So I understand, and the president of the United States, I am sure, understands as a Democrat and as a former peacenik, Barack Obama gets it. He gets that we don't want a huge ground invasion in the Middle East. We don't want to invade Syria. We don't want to reinvade Iraq. But I think if you limit his powers from the get-go, you send a telegraph to the enemy where they can feel assured that no matter what, they're not going to see the 101st Airborne at their front door. They're not going to see the 82nd Airborne. They're not going to see a big red one. I think that I understand we're sick of war. But this is self-defense. This isn't just punishment. And I believe in punishment. I believe in revenge. I believe that the Jordanians are absolutely righteous when they are avenging the burning death of their pilot. I believe in Old Testament eye for an eye. But I also, having been in so much combat, understand that you never know what you need to win a certain battle. You never know out front. You can't predict that in the halls of Congress. I think that the Democrats and the Republicans can show that they are patriots by getting together, making the language that they think they need, but giving the president the war authorization now. Send the message to ISIS now that we are coming after them. Jay in New Jersey, 866 or other. What up, Jay?
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo? You have a good heart, but you can't listen to John McCain. This guy supported every single venture overseas. He wants to give, you know, weapons to the people against Russia. I forgot what they're called.
The Ukrainians?
Ukrainians, you know. So it's like, when is enough enough? I mean, you know, the country's
but
broke.
Talk about ISIS saying, specifically, Jay. This is about ISIS. I know that if you were president, Jay, and you saw what ISIS did to our people, including this 26-year-old girl, a woman from Arizona, you would want to strike back. Wouldn't you want? Don't you want to contain them? Don't you want to destroy them?
If you really want to destroy him, you would just have to give Assad the weapons and let him take care of what he has to take care of.
Well, I'm not opposed to that either. I think we have that ass backwards. I would definitely support Assad over the so-called moderates in Syria. I don't think there are any moderates in Syria. But, Jay, thanks. Thoughtful call. Okay, I'm going to get to your other calls. 866-Geraldo. I want to get to that Akai Gurley case. So important. You know, a cop now indicted. You know, I understand that was a terrible, terrible accident. That was a terrible tragedy, what happened in the darkened stairwell of that housing project there. And an innocent man, Akai Gurley, lost his life doing absolutely nothing wrong. He was totally innocent. But are we going to start indicting cops? I mean, it's a tough call. And would it have been the same in Staten Island? Was it a racial call? 18 minutes after 10 o'clock. We'll be right back.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story. For New York, live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
It's as tough as anything that I do, having conversation with parents who, understandably, want, by any means necessary, for their children to be safe.
She says that she found freedom even in captivity, and that she is grateful. And so her light shines. And we thank you for shining your light, not on Kayla, but shine your light on the suffering that Kayla saw.
I'd like to shine the light on ISIS, the butchers who are responsible for Kayla's death. And I want them to be pounded now. We have to stop them. They are a clear and present danger to the United States of America. The Republicans are right on this. The Democrats are wrong to try to curtail the president's powers, the war powers. You give him the power to fight the fight. That's the power you give him. He's the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States. You can't legislate that. What do you think? 866 Geraldo, Freddie in Bedford, you're first up. What up?
Hey, Geraldo. I got to say I agree with giving the president the power and over Kayla. Definitely. But listening to yesterday's show, the way you talk about Iran and Israel, Iran's swearing to wipe Israel off the map. If anybody did that to us, we'd be war in a second.
Here's what I think about Israel. I think that's a fair point. Let me just say what I think about Iran. First of all, Iran and Israel don't share a border. They're separated by about 300-400 miles. Secondly, if Iran were to use, what would happen? Let me finish. If Iran were to use a nuclear weapon, what do you or anyone else think would happen? Let's say Iran launches a nuclear strike against Israel, an atom bomb. For the first time since 1945, a nation uses an atom bomb. What do you think Israel, with a huge nuclear arsenal, is going to do? Furthermore, do you think once an atom bomb is used against Israel, that the world is going to be immune from the nuclear contagion that would follow? It would be the beginning of the end of the world. It is not just an existential threat, as Bibi Netanyahu is campaigning on in Israel. It is an existential threat to planet Earth. It's not just Israel's fight. It's everybody's fight. Iran will not be permitted to have a nuclear weapon. And even if they had one, they would never use it for fear that they would destroy the Earth itself. They're not ISIS. Iran is not ISIS. This is Persian society that goes back millennium. We can, with various stereotyping, make them in your mind anything you want. But they are not going to launch a nuclear strike. The only people that are stupid enough to do something so earth-shattering are the apocalyptic nihilists, ISIS, and similar radicals who care more about death than they do about life. We have to crush ISIS. That's where our focus should be. And don't get me started on Bibi Netanyahu and this trip to Washington to make this speech before Congress. Because if you think that helps Israel, then we are definitely on different pages. Colonel Burns, thank you very much for calling, sir. How are you?
Very good, sir. How are you?
Thank you, and thank you for your service.
Two points I want to make. One point, I know they said there were no weapons of mass destruction, and like you, I was over there 04, 05. In Khalil and Taji, they found some chemical weapons that are weapons of mass destruction in a warehouse on that Air Force base.
Well, I remember that, Colonel, and I know that that they did find some of that poison gas in undeliverable containers that were leaking. It took a time to not nearly as advanced as say Syria and yes. Assad's chemical weapons, but there were no. We were talking about uranium and nuclear rods and all that BS, and it wasn't true.
Yeah.
What unit were you with, Colonel?
I was with the 301st ASG out of New York. We were the Liberty Division.
Well, thank you again for your service. I don't know if we ran into each other in those days. But,
we were pretty close. But the second point is that
Let me ask you, before you get to your second, what do you think of the Brian Williams deal?
Duty, honor, country. One of the things that we depend on you, sir, as a journalist, is honesty and integrity. We take you at face value. If you say it's blue, we believe it's blue. Now, this gentleman claims this. You know, he's part of the Stolen Valor group.
I understand that, and I understand how serious and how seriously people who have actually been in combat take, people who exaggerate and pretend that they were in combat. But, you know, his lie, it didn't seem to me. I mean, he was with the 101st. He was there in March in the invasion of Iraq. It wasn't like he was home in, Sheboygan, with his feet up when he pretended to be in Iraq. Anyway, quickly, can you make your other point? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Fine. The other point is that you can't put handcuffs on the President of the United States.
Amen.
I mean, if you need an ODA, which is the SF teams to go in, you need logistics.
You need it. I got to let you go. Got the news. But, Colonel, again, thanks.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back. 37 minutes after 10 o'clock. It is a busy day. We have all kinds of news that I want to talk about. The line's already filled. People are engaged. The smartest audience in talk radio. I have to say I'm very proud of you. The president seeking the war powers authorization. The cop about to be indicted in the death of Akai Gurley, the 28-year-old man killed in the housing project in the Pink Houses in East New York. We have the death of Kyla Mueller. Very, very important stories. Things really happening out there. I want to start, though, with the third grade recital this morning. Hi, honey.
Hi.
How'd she do?
Oh, she was super. She was so fantastic.
Sometimes she could be shy. Was she shy? My wife Erica on the phone. Was she shy, Sol?
She was the opposite of shy. Actually, I mean, she was such a natural. She didn't tell me that she was going to be in front the whole time. And she smiled from ear to ear the entire time. It was so fabulous. And parents came up to me afterwards and said, "Oh my God, she's just like her father. She's such a ham. And I was shocked. It was so funny."
All right, we'll give her a kiss for Daddy. I'm so sorry I missed it.
I
got to move on. All right, love you, honey.
I love you too.
All right, bye bye. All right, now to the serious stuff. Kirsten John Foy works with Al Sharpton's National Action Network. He's regional director. And yesterday he issued a statement that said he was pleased with the cop being indicted in the death of Akai Gurley, who was shot and killed again in the East New York, in the Pink Houses in East New York last November by a rookie cop who had his gun out, had his hand on the trigger and heard a noise. Peter Liang did. Now Kirsten, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
So let me ask you, do you think that the cop would have been indicted same exact facts if this had happened in Staten Island?
Absolutely not. We've seen that there has been a difference in the way that this Brooklyn District Attorney, Ken Thompson, has executed his grand jury as opposed to Dan Donovan. The grand jury threshold for indictment is different than the threshold for conviction. So the question about whether or not the cop is guilty or not isn't really relevant in the grand jury. The question that the grand jury must answer is whether or not it is possible that the cop was wrong and violated the law, and it requires further investigation and further meeting out. And so,
right, so what about? I get you, Kirsten. I get you, and I note with interest that you think. So do you think it's a racial ploy? You think that Donovan is like a cheerleader for the white folks, and Ken Thompson, a black man, is standing up for the minority?
No, I think that this is really about political orientation and ambition. Quite frankly, the Ken Thompson doesn't have an election to worry about. He has just been elected, and his focus is really meeting out justice. Dan Donovan wants to go to Congress. He represents a largely Republican, largely law enforcement community. And so there are political differences. And let's remember, the cop, Peter Liang, is also a minority. And so this isn't really about race as much as it is about holding police accountable to the law that they enforce.
Now, what happens? Kirsten John Foy, with me, regional director of the National Action Network, one of the big organization run by Reverend Al Sharpton. What happens if the jury acquits the cop because it's the most dangerous housing project in the city, a very spooky situation, dark, responding to, reports that there are criminals about? I mean, it's very possible that this cop could be acquitted at trial.
It is possible, but it's also worth noting that the district attorney indicted on several different charges. So where the officer may be found not guilty on one, he may be found guilty on another. I think the larger point, the more significant point, is that we now have a renewed faith in the process, that when the district attorney does their job diligently, that there is cause to have faith in the process.
Okay, Kirsten, hold on. Let me get a couple of calls on this. Crash, punch in Laura from Harlem there. Laura, hi. You're on with the representative from Reverend Sharpton. Hi. So what do you think of what you're hearing here?
Okay. In terms of the indictment, basically that's what it is. It's an indictment, Geraldo. I was on a jury stand before and to witness to the prosecutor. And it's really a joke in here. So what I'm saying is that it's an indictment, and that's what we were looking for in the other cases.
In the Eric Garner case.
Hello?
In the chokehold case in Staten Island.
Exactly. And as well as, you know...
Let me ask you both this. So here's Laura. We're on the phone with Laura, who's just a listener. Kirsten John Foy represents Reverend Sharpton. What about the contention? Let me get Kirsten you first, and then Laurie, I want you to respond too. What about the possibility that this indictment by the Ken Thompson-run grand jury in Brooklyn is a response to all of those demonstrations, hands up, don't shoot, all the rest of it, that there was so much political pressure that there was almost had to be an indictment of this cop? Kirsten, you first.
Well, I would say relative to some of the other cases, like the Garner case and like Michael Brown and even more distant New York cases, the Gurley case and Akai Gurley did not receive as much notoriety as some of these other cases.
I think timing played a lot to do with that. But go ahead.
I agree with that, and it's also us not wanting to rush to judgment. Look, the facts of this case are different than the others. This officer did not intentionally discharge his weapon at Akai Gurley per se.
Exactly.
And so we're not.
So you could say this was just one of those awful tragic accidents.
Yes,
that there is no criminal responsibility.
Well, no, because an accident can still still lead you to a criminal criminal responsibility.
That is absolutely true. As a lawyer, I confirm that. Okay, Laura, and then Kristen, I want to say goodbye to you. Give my regards to Reverend Sharpton. Laura, you stay on. Punch in John from Staten Island, Crash. So, John, Laura, you comment first. Then I want to have John from Staten Island. You comment on the fact that. You know, what about the question? This is political pressure that led to this indictment, Laura.
Well, I mean, we can say that to a certain extent. One of the things I think that Ken Thompson is an excellent DA on both sides. I just think he's great. In addition to that, Geraldo, in this particular case, I don't know so much as being political, but I think that if it does go to trial, what needs to not so much as this young officer, but the fact that we had two rookies. So there's things that need to be, you know.
That's it. That's a good point. That's a good point. So that's not the cop's fault as much as it's the boss's fault that sent two rookies into the pink houses that night. Okay, Laura, I'm gonna say goodbye to you, honey, because I'm out of time here. I got to give John from Staten Island last word in this segment. So, John, what are you thinking about this?
How does this show up any credibility when you put some guy from Al Sharpton's group on there? The guy's nothing but a shakedown artist. And what you should have asked the guy is how soon after the guy that they don't convict the guy, how soon after are you going to start burning the neighborhood down? And that's all they do is they threaten. They don't get their way. They go burn the neighborhood down. It's a joke. You have the guy on.
All right, John, thank you. Thank you for your opinion, very passionately voiced. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who agree with you who are listening right now. But right now, I've got to go to a quick commercial break. I'll be back to your calls at 866-Geraldo. So much going on today that responsible citizens have to stand up and tell the world how you feel about these important issues that affect your life on a daily basis. 46 after 10 o'clock. We'll be back.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Okay, welcome back at 54 minutes after 10 o'clock. We've been talking about the coming indictment, which will be announced specifically this afternoon, of the rookie cop, Peter Liang, an Asian-American rookie who killed Akai Gurley in the darkened stairwell of the Pink Houses in East New York, one of the most dangerous places to live in the big city. All right, so let me get some calls on that issue, and then in the next hour we'll broaden it to the other topics that are on my mind. Here's John, our pal in Manhattan. What's up, John?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. Good to talk to you again. I think this business with Kai Gurley is just horrible, just a terrible, terrible tragedy. But I got to tell you that I think that Al Sharpton would have been a lot happier if the officer involved had been white instead of also an Asian or also a minority.
Interesting. You know, hang in there, John. Hey, Noam, remember Charles Blow in the New York Times? He wrote the story about the Yale cop who drew the gun on his son. His son was traumatized by it, and Charles left out the key fact that the officer involved was black. What do you think of what John is saying here, that if the officer involved was white, Sharpton would be happier?
Maybe it'd be good fundraising for his organization if the officer was white.
But, the thing about it is that I think that it's easy to say that Sharpton is a man of no character. He's an exploiter. He's an opportunist and all the rest of it. But I don't see him that way. I don't see him. I think that when you are so stereotypical in your response to the guy, to strip him of all value is very is unfair. I don't like that. I don't like that. I think, for instance, I mean, and this is maybe an awkward segue, but I think that's what has happened with Brian Williams on this mistake that Brian Williams made, or the intentional lie, however egregious you want to characterize it. Now the guy he's out. Brian Williams is out. They say he's suspended for 6 months without pay, which is a $5 million penalty, incidentally. He gets paid $10 million a year. So even if he comes back and starts getting paid 6 months from now, it's a $5 million fine, essentially, that he has paid. It's like a Wall Street Bank type fine. But what has bothered me about the criticism, aside from the fact that most of it is being led by pseudo-journalists who never put themselves at risk and really irks me, but what's really very hurtful, and I think aside from the fact that he has a loving family, and now his family and he are said to be shattered, is that his entire career is now devalued. Everything he ever did, everything he ever said, every time he ever risked anything, all the journalism he did, it's all like it's all in the garbage heap now. How is he going to come back 6 months from now? What's he going to come back and just regurgitate this whole story all over again 6 months from now? Do you think NBC wants that? I don't know. I think this is a bad mistake. But your calls on this and other things when I come back after this.
New York comes to talk. He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk. All I want to do is have some fun. I got a feeling I'm not the only one. All I want to do is have some fun. I got a feeling I'm not the only one. All I want to do is have some fun. Until the sun comes up over Santa Monica Boulevard.
Happy birthday, Sheryl Crow. 6 minutes after 11 o'clock on this 11th day of February, a chilly day, but the end of winter is in sight, please God. Ken Thompson, the aggressive new district attorney in Brooklyn, perhaps responding to the community's concern over notorious cases like the Michael Brown case in Ferguson, Missouri, the Eric Garner chokehold case on Staten Island, has guided the grand jury in Kings County to indict the cop, the rookie cop, the 27-year-old rookie cop, Peter Liang, for the accidental shooting of a Kai Gurley, 28-year-old, totally innocent young man, shot dead in a police shooting that the commissioner, Bill Breton, called an unfortunate accident. I agree with that. It was an unfortunate accident. The grand jury, though, with Ken Thompson, the Brooklyn DA's guidance, has decided that the cop committed a crime. He has been indicted now, we are told, for criminally negligent homicide, for reckless endangerment, for second-degree assault, and official misconduct. So none of those crimes require intent, criminal intent. We'll hear officially from the grand jury a little later today. What do you think? Should the cop have been indicted? You know what this case reminds me most of? Of all the police shootings I've covered in New York, Sean Bell. Remember Sean Bell? He was a young man, I think 23 years old, Queens. He was getting married the next day. He was at his bachelor party. There had been some crimes in the area. They had a team out there looking for crimes. They saw Sean Bell. They told him to stop. He panicked, Sean did, or I don't know exactly what the circumstances were, although I've been there, I've reported on it, I don't recall right now, back in 2006. The cops shot the hell out of that car. Sean Bell was killed, totally innocent, unarmed. I don't think the cops were not indicted, as I recall, in that case at all. They were not indicted, but they were fired. They were fired, and I think they were stripped of their pensions as well. I wonder if that wouldn't have been a more appropriate thing to do in this case. Fire that cop, make sure he doesn't get a pension. But now he's got to defend himself. And the city's being sued for $50 million by Kai Gurley's common law wife, Kimberly Ballinger. Bernie Kerik was commissioner of the cops here in pivotal time in New York history during 9/11, helped guide us through that traumatic time. Kamish, welcome. What do you think of the indictment of the cop?
Well, honestly, Geraldo, I think the difference here between the Bell shooting and this shooting is that in the Bell circumstance, those cops were there because there were problems, violence there. If I recall correctly, somebody had yelled there was a gun. They thought there was a gun on the scene. The guy was told to stop. He didn't stop, whatever the case may be, and the shooting erupted. In this case, it doesn't look like there was a call for service. It doesn't look like there, and I want to be clear, I don't have any of the evidence. I don't know anything that the grand jury got to see. And that's the thing we have to deal with here. You know, everybody that looks at these things looks at it from an outside scope.
Well, that's an interesting point, though. That is an interesting point. Commissioner Bernard Carrick is my guest. He points out that the Sean Bell situation, those cops were alerted to a crime being committed, and someone did call out he's got a gun. It may have been a fellow cop, but there was definitely that said. In the Akai Gurley case, there was no 911 call. The cops were patrolling the pink houses, and the rookie cop had his gun out, Peter Liang did, with his finger on the trigger, obviously. So you, it sounds, Bernie, are surprising me. You think the indictment might be justified.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with the charges I've seen in the indictment based on what I've read, but I don't have all the evidence.
I think second-degree manslaughter might be a little harsh, but criminally negligent homicide could definitely apply.
Well, that's what it appears to be. And in this case, he was on routine patrol. He was doing a vertical sweep of the building. Why he had his weapon out is going to have to be looked at by a jury.
But let me ask you this. Wouldn't his boss, wouldn't the sergeant tell him, you know, calm down, kid? You know, why was he out there with his gun out?
Well, I can't say. I wasn't there. And I don't know if he was with a sergeant. Was he with a sergeant or another cop?
No, he was with another cop in the building. Isn't there a sergeant nearby when these guys go out?
No,
and why'd you have two rookies together anyway?
These guys go up into the, they do these vertical sweeps all the time, especially if you're working in the housing projects. You know, to check the stairwells, check the elevators, check the roofs of the buildings, because that's where a lot of robberies, rapes, assaults occur. They do this constantly. They do it all the time. In this circumstance, the cop had his gun out, was fearful of something, it appears to be. And at some point, he fired his weapon. This is stuff that's going to have to be, why? What was he afraid of? Was he afraid of something? Did something startle him? These are all the things that's going to have to be looked at.
What do you think? I'm going to leave that topic because I got so much to talk about. But what do you think about the war powers authorization for the president? You know King Abdullah II, the ruler of Jordan, very well. You work for him. I wish the probation people would free you so you could go help King Abdullah in this fight as you did back in the 2000s there. But what do you think of the president's war powers authorization? Do you fear this is another Iraq war, another can of worms that's going to lead unnecessarily to American deaths?
I don't necessarily think it's another can of worms. I think what it is the reality is, we have to fight this enemy, and
we have to crush them. We have to crush them.
That's exactly
right.
And you're not going to be able to do that. It's going to be virtually impossible. And this is according to every U.S. military commander I've spoken to. You're not going to do this just with air power alone. You're not going to do it. So there's two additional things that have to happen. One is we have to get boots on the ground in some way. And two, we have to fund the people that are there that can really fight this fight, like Egypt and Jordan. They know this enemy better than anyone, better than anyone. They can get in there with their intelligence capabilities better than anyone, but they need money to do this. You want to win this battle, you want to win the war against ISIS, you want to kill them and crush them, and that's what it's going to take, whether people like it. You have to kill them, because if you don't kill them, they're going to kill us. And to do that, we need to get people on the ground. We need intelligence that can come from our Arab partners, and we need to give them the resources they need to do the job that has to be done, and they can do it.
You know, I am so pissed off at Elliot Jacobson, the U.S. attorney in Westchester, who refuses to drop your stupid probation for no reason other than spite. You should be over there helping King Abdullah beat these people.
Well,
anyway, you don't have to comment on that. Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble. Okay. All right. Love you, Bernie. Thank you.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later. All right. What are you thinking? Here's Paul in Queens. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Geraldo. The question for me is, if this is going on since last year, and he was only, it was a JV team only, and Maria had eight people kidnapped, when he said he had somebody looking for the girl, he's a day late, and actually a few months late. That's the bottom line.
I agree with you. I think, ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States made two horrible errors that I don't think, with all the nonsense about Obamacare and Benghazi, everybody misses the real errors this president made. What were they? Number one, he went to Cairo and he encouraged the so-called Arab Spring, which was really encouraging insurrection against the established governments that destabilized the entire region. That Cairo speech was so naive that it was pathetic, and history will come to regard it as such. More immediately, he missed the fact that ISIS was a malignant force that had already, by last June, taken over substantial territory in Syria and was crossing over the border into Iraq. He allowed, therefore, the second largest city in Iraq, Mosul, to fall to ISIS, which still occupies Mosul, the second largest city in Iraq. Those are the two things that the president bears responsibility for. But that's history. Now we have to deal with current events. Now he has to crush ISIS. He has to kill ISIS. It's hard to use that verb, to kill, because it's kind of like you Americans, we get rattled by that. Kill, we got to kill them. We have to kill them. We have to kill this enemy. We have to crush this enemy. This enemy, you talk about an existential threat to Israel and to the Suez Canal and to American interests in the Middle East. This is ISIS. You can't make peace with ISIS. ISIS wants your shopping mall. They want your school. They want your country. And now they're saying that the young lady, Kayla, who was killed, may have been a slave, an ISIS slave, they're saying now. I want to kill them. 17 minutes after 11. We'll be right back.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back. I want to get to Eitan Peetz at the bottom of the hour. Maybe save the last half hour of the show for the Eitan Peetz murder trial. I remember the case so well. I'm sure you do too. When the kid disappeared, if you're of a certain age. 1979, it really started everybody being freaked out about child snatching. Happened in Soho. I'll get to that. But now your call's first. Avi's been holding on. Thanks for your patience. Avi, what's up, man?
Hi, how are you, Geraldo?
Pretty good, brother.
Okay, I just wanted to speak to you regarding in terms of Netanyahu.
Sure.
I disagree with you in terms of the fact that he needs to come and speak to Congress. I really believe. I have two comments. One about him speaking to Congress and one about how you've covered Israel over the years. First thing with him speaking to Congress, I really believe that he needs to come in and speak and tell the whole country what's going on in terms of Iran.
You don't think he could tell the whole country what's going on in a different context, in a different setting, like at the AIPAC convention that's going on at the same time in Washington?
I think he could have done it like that as well, but I think this will make more of a noise, honestly.
It'll make a noise, but it'll be a discordant noise that'll divide the American public in the same way the Israeli public is divided over this trip, Avi. And if you love Israel, why aggravate your best friend?
It's not really aggravating your best friend, because everybody in America supports Israel. I would say about almost 100% of Americans support Israel. So it's not
I agree with that assessment. I don't know if it's 100%, but it's certainly a vast majority. Why bring in an issue where you divide Democrats from Republicans on the issue of support for Israel?
I just think that wasn't his intention. I think his intention
been his intention, but it's the effect now. You have 15 at least congressmen who are boycotting, and vice president's not going to be there. The president of the United States is saying every time someone asks how unpleasant this whole thing is. No, well, anyway, what about my support for Israel over the years?
Okay, so I've been wanting to speak to you for years about this, okay?
Well, don't go too long with it, but just give me the headline.
Okay, two things. 10 years ago, when you were speaking to Yasser Arafat, you interviewed him and you were...
2002.
What?
2002.
In 2002, you were speaking to Yasser Arafat, and you were begging him. You were begging him to condemn the terror that
I was.
The Palestinians were doing when they were blowing themselves up in pizza parlors and kindergartens.
I did.
And right. He wouldn't do so. He wouldn't. You were there trying to condemn it, and it was horrible for me to see that. It was like, for me to see you, Geraldo, blowing yourself to this arch terrorist, you know, I was appalled as an American and as a Jew. I was very upset. And I was
upset that I was trying to get Yasser Arafat to condemn suicide bombers?
Yeah, because...
Why is that upsetting?
Because everybody knows he supported suicide bombers. Everybody knew he supported it. On one end he was saying, you know, let's
make peace.
In Arabic, he would say on the other end, let's kill the Jews. So it was, you know, for you to go there and to try to for you just to, you know.
I don't apologize for that at all. What's your last point, Avi? I got to move on.
Okay, my last point was when Israel fought back this summer, you said that, you know, they were
fought back against Gaza? I don't think so.
Gaza. You said they were doing it out of proportion. And then you said that you had a right to speak based on the fact that you had a Star of David tattooed on your hand.
Yes, I do.
I don't think that gives anybody to...
Don't you want a tough Jew like me on your side, Avi? Avi, don't you want a tough Jew like me on your side?
I do, but I don't want a tough Jew.
Come on, brother. Don't lecture your brothers. Lecture the enemy, not me. But I appreciate the call, Avi. Thank you very much. Noam Lade, what are you doing?
That's a long time to hold on to that kind of pain. 10 years he's been wanting to talk to you.
12
years.
On 13. Yeah. The interesting thing about 2002 was such an amazing year. That was the year that Arafat got out of Israeli confinement, and he went back to Ramallah, and that was, I think it was the last time there was a realistic chance for peace, because that was the year that the Arab foreign ministers got together in Beirut, and they agreed to recognize Israel if Israel recognized Palestine. And then you had the Passover bombing, and the Palestinian terrorists killed a whole bunch of elderly Jews in, I forget where, Herzliya, one of those towns. And you just saw peace disappear. But that was the last time before that terrorist attack in Israel, when they killed the old folks at Passover, that was the last time I felt optimistic. I spoke with Arafat. From Arafat, I went to, with Craig, we went to, and Greg Hart, we went to Lebanon where the foreign ministers were meeting, the Arab foreign ministers. I was so... juiced with the prospects of peace finally having covered the area since 1973, but it all came to crap. It was so sad.
And does it all fall on Arafat?
You know, I don't think all's a lot. All's a lot. I don't think it all falls on Arafat. Absolutely not. I'll be right back. So much more. But Noam, now with the news.
The sound of the city. Geraldo. Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Welcome back. 37 minutes after the hour. One note I haven't addressed yet regarding, remember the massacre in Paris of the cops and the kosher deli. Josh Earnest, who I generally like, the spokesman for the White House, said that the deli, the kosher deli, was chosen. I think I'm getting this right. The kosher deli was chosen by the terrorist at random. It wasn't an anti-Semitic act. It was a random crime. They chose the kosher deli, and that not all of the victims were Jews, Josh Earnest said. That doesn't jive with the way I remember that case. I mean, no, you may remember it differently, but I thought that all of the victims in the kosher deli were Jewish, and that he chose the Jewish target. I mean, you go to a kosher deli, even in New York, the odds are that the people inside are going to be Jewish. It seems to me to make that a random incident rather than an anti-Semitic act is a political rather than a historic a decision. What say you?
What is the thinking behind it? I'm trying to understand why they want to classify it in that way. It's like saying the terrorists went into that newspaper just randomly. They picked that newspaper. I mean,
I agree.
So silly, but I'm trying to figure out what the political advantage
is. But you know what it might be? You remember your history lessons. During the Roosevelt administration, as we were fighting WW2, The United States did not make a big fuss about the fact that we were fighting this war in part to stop the extermination of the Jews in Europe because they were afraid there'd be an anti-Semitic backlash among Americans. Why are we doing this to save these Jews? Maybe it's something like that. Maybe he wants to make this a crime against humanity rather than, in this particular case, a crime against a bunch of Jewish people.
Yeah, but it seems so outrageous if you look with everything going on in France to suggest that it has anything to do with anything about the fact that they were Jews inside that deli is outrageous. Just look at the number of Jews that are leaving there.
And so. I think just go into Zabar's someday.
You're right. You did the same crowd.
Same crowd. All right. So, Josh, come on. Open your eyes. Okay, let me take a couple of calls, and I really want to get to the Eitan Peetz case, but I do want to go to people who have been holding on for a while. Rich, our pal in White Plains. What's up, Rich?
Hey, Geraldo, how are you?
Good, buddy.
With regard to the hostages that are being executed over in the Middle East,
right?
It's one thing if you're in the military deployed and you have to be there, which you'll notice that there are no military people who were caught and captured and being held and executed. They're all civilians, journalists, aid workers, and I just don't understand why, A, they go to those places. Well, I understand why they, the same reason Bo Bergdahl wandered off. It's like the guy in the zoo who wants to jump into the lion's den and pet him. I don't understand why they go there.
Well, I got you. And I think that's a good point, but I think that that's a cruel comparison. It's not like the guy that jumps into the lion's den. I mean, one thing I want to point out, none of these people who have been victimized, as far as I know, work for major news organizations. I mean, the major news organizations have been extremely prudent and careful. And also the people we work with in those regions, the so-called fixers, are people that we know and are vetted. I trust my friends like Akbar Shinwari in Afghanistan. I trust and have trusted him with my life. I know that he would never sell me out. But these young people, many of them inexperienced and none of them affiliated with the major news organization, go there and they hire these people, and these people are ratting them out and selling them for bounty to the terrorists. It's very, very unfortunate. But having said that, I don't in any way want to diminish the motivation, the good spirit, the compassion, the generosity of spirit and of soul that motivates people like this Kyla to go there to alleviate the suffering of the people in the region. I don't in any way want to diminish that. But I will point out, for the record, look at Fox News, how reluctant they have been to send me back to Iraq. I remember I had that trip planned to Kurdistan, and they told me that I couldn't go for budgetary reasons. It wasn't for budgetary reasons. I know that. I know that they were worried that the marginal difference I would make in terms of my expertise or my reportage from the area was not worth the risk of having. Imagine if ISIS had a hostage who was a well-known name. They'd have a weapon against us to use. And it would be very, very unfortunate. Here's Michael in New Jersey. What's up, Michael? Hello, Michael. You there? Hi, Michael. Hello? You there? Hello. Hi.
Yeah, I'm here, Geraldo. Listen, I just want to ask you a quick question. How come you haven't commented on the New York Times retraction about the breaking article that they put out, basically saying that the White House was upset about Netanyahu accepting the invitation to speak in front of Congress?
I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about, Michael.
There was a retraction that the New York Times put out that said that Netanyahu did not accept the invitation from Boehner to speak in Congress until after the White House was notified.
I don't know anything about that retraction. I am holding the L.A. Times in my hand. Let me just read what it says here. Hold on, dude. Here's what the L.A. Times says. It says a bit of nose thumbing at Washington is a long Israeli tradition. But what began weeks ago as a seeming breach of protocol, House Speaker John Boehner inviting Netanyahu to address lawmakers without first clearing it with the White House, and the Prime Minister pressing ahead despite Obama's evident displeasure, has grown into what some veteran diplomatic observers are describing as, and this is the important part, a full-blown threat to the staunch support that Washington has long offered Israel in the international arena. This is the front page of the L.A. Times, not affiliated at all with the New York Times. And it's written by two people who sound like they have a Jewish name, Sobelman and King from Jerusalem is the byline. This is bad news for the Israeli-American relationship. It's so unnecessary. Here's Clark in New Jersey. What's on your mind, Clark?
Hi, Geraldo. I was wondering, throughout the years, I've always thought that Al Sharpton should be charged with murder because of the riots he incited that killed Yanko Rosen.
Crown Heights, you mean?
And the grocery store, yes, yes. I mean, but he's responsible for the death of probably about five people, maybe six.
Yeah, I don't think you could attribute that to Reverend Sharpton. I know that a lot of people hate him.
He incited these riots.
You know, someone who incited a riot. You saw it on television. It was the Michael Brown stepfather when he said, "Burn this place down." That's inciting a riot. Sharpton never said anything like that, Clark. I'm sorry. I think that, you know, you could hate the guy for all kinds of reasons, but to accuse him of murder, I think is going over the top. Here's Mario in New Jersey. What are you thinking about, Mario?
Geraldo, how are you? Geraldo,
good man.
I love you like a brother. Okay, Geraldo, I would put Al Sharpton. And I would take him seriously if he just paid his taxes like everybody else.
that's a good point.
I got a letter right now that I'm looking at the IRS. I underpaid them $800. I have to give them the money immediately or send my newborn grandson to the IRS. Of course, I'm exaggerating. Okay, number one. Number two, talking about...
you got to pay the taxes. You got to pay your taxes. You can't mess with
them. Come on, pay your taxes out. Then shoot your mouth off, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing is, this Brian Williams guy, Geraldo, do you think Eric, Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, Eric Severide, or John Cameron Swayze would have done the same thing what Brian Williams did? And furthermore,
because they wouldn't have gone on a show like David Letterman or these other comedy shows to be a personality. I think that's where the problem is. When you get on those shows, you're relaxing. It's like you're at the bar talking with your buddies, and that's where he made his big mistake.
All right, let me, John, you want some forgiveness, Brian? Write a check for $2 million to Wounded Warriors, and then
that's a good idea. I'm glad you mentioned that, Mario. I don't know about it, and thanks for the call, and good luck with the IRS. I think that with Brian Williams, Noam, I think that one of the things he could do, and I think that NBC could have encouraged this rather than what they've done, which is a slow execution of his career, is, work with Wounded Warriors. I know that he's very sensitive to the plight of returning GIs with post-traumatic stress and all the rest of it. If he did that, that's a nice payback. Something like that, something positive where he could show remorse for the tall tale without absolutely wiping out a guy that was, so important to so many viewers. I mean, he was number one. He was number one by a long shot.
Far and away. I'm surprised, though. I think the mistake he made, and I think this is the reason you won't see him back on NBC, is he should have made a really definitive statement on his mistake day one or day two when it exploded. But he let
once
it
he
go
talked
too
to
long.
Stars and Stripes. Once he talked to Stars and Stripes,
he should have come out.
That was when he should have done it.
Yeah.
I am sorry. I was not on that helicopter. I misrepresented that. I didn't do it with the intention to lie, but in effect, I did lie. Please accept my forgiveness. My apology. Forgive me. I'll work hard to redeem your trust. My family and I are in total anguish over this. There's a way without it. I mean, the guy is not a child molester. I think it's really over the top. Anyway, Noman, I'll be back after this.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You know what I want to do tomorrow? I want to try and find Eitan Peitz's parents or someone close to the family to find out what they think about this guy confessing to these Pedro Hernandez confessing to the murder of the 6-year-old back in 1979, this notorious case that I'm telling you, it really it was so big in New York. Can you imagine a beautiful six-year-old kid walking to the bus stop to go to school? I mean, nowadays, you wouldn't even consider letting your kid walk to the bus stop. My goodness, this is West Broadway and Prince Street. I mean, this is like the heart of Soho. But I'm troubled by this confession, I have to say, because, he had 6 hours of interrogation, three detectives, before the guy breaks down and confesses, and then they turn on the video camera only at the end of that 6 hour interrogation, and 12 hours later he gives the longer confession, but he seems emotionally disturbed. I want to see more corroborating evidence, I guess. No, that's my deal.
You know, he gives a pretty detailed confession, and the first thing you can say is somebody who kills a six-year-old is automatically emotionally disturbed. I mean, you can make that argument right away, but I think when you watch that confession, boy, he gives a lot of details.
It
about
sounds
how
real
that
to
took
you.
Place.
I haven't seen the video yet. I've just heard it. I haven't seen it yet. But all right, we'll deal with this tomorrow. I know that when Ray Kelly arrested him, when the former police commissioner had him arrested, he was very confident that they had this case nailed. And I have nothing but respect for Ray Kelly. So if they say so, I tend to believe it. But these, I don't know, it seems so neat the way they package it all of a sudden. And they thought this other guy had done it for years. And the family successfully sued this other guy for killing the child. Anyway, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And if I didn't get to your calls today, it's only because we've had so many wonderful calls from our terrific and motivated listeners. Give me another try tomorrow. So much going on in the world. We're in it together. Noam, thank you. I'll see you mañana. And ladies and gentlemen, hasta mañana. Thank you very much. Love you.